If you think of all of the movements, whether it be civil rights movements, different political movements, what do they have in common? They have a pretty strong narrative or story that is the basis of what they're trying to accomplish. For example, Judy Heumann, who passed away a couple years ago, she was able to change the laws along with a lot of other people with disabilities because they were talking about their experiences, not being able to access certain spaces. So often people with learning differences are told writing and reading are going to be difficult. I also had teachers that looked at me and said, hey, you actually have a gift for writing. And I'd be like, what? Somebody with dyslexia can be a writer? What? And so person storytelling is shifting the narrative of making sure that we are not just looking at the deficit model, but looking at it like my friend Gil Brashoni says, who's a dyslexic designer. Dyslexia and other learning differences are actually hyperability. And so spreading that awareness is the first step to any really meaningful change, if that makes sense.
Hello, friends. This is Think Inclusive. I'm Tim Villegas. And who you just heard was Riley Mulcahy, a passionate nonprofit leader and advocate for individuals with learning differences. Riley is the founder and executive director of the Riley Project, an organization born from his personal journey with dyslexia, and dedicated to storytelling, community building, and empowering neurodivergent students and young adults. He also serves as the marketing and admissions associate at Compass High School, where he champions inclusive, strengths-based education. Riley's work extends to initiatives like the Neurodiversity Education Series and broader efforts to build more supportive systems for neurodivergent individuals. With a background in English and creative writing from St. Mary's College of California, Riley brings a unique blend of strategic vision and narrative power to everything he does. He's here today to share insights on inclusion, advocacy, and how we can all help create spaces where everyone learns and thrives differently. Thanks so much for being here with us today. We appreciate each and every one of you listening to or watching Think Inclusive, MCIE's podcast that brings you conversations with people doing the work of inclusion in the real world. And while you are here, make sure to follow or subscribe wherever you are so you can keep getting Think Inclusive in your feed. In this episode of Think Inclusive, Riley and I discuss his personal journey with dyslexia, the importance of multisensory instruction, and the issues surrounding the wait to fail model in education. Riley shares insights on how storytelling has driven social movements, the role of technology and AI in learning, and offers practical advice for parents and educators on supporting students with learning differences. We also emphasize the significance of early intervention, strong reading interventions, and the impact of inclusive and accessible narratives in creating meaningful change. Before we get into my conversation with Riley, I want to tell you about our sponsor for this season, IXL. IXL is a fantastic all-in-one platform designed for K-12 education. It helps boost student achievement, empowers teachers, and tracks progress seamlessly. Imagine having a tool that simplifies what usually requires dozens of different resources. Well, that's IXL. As students practice, IXL adapts to their individual needs, ensuring they're both supported and challenged. Plus, each learner receives a personalized learning plan to effectively address any knowledge gaps. Interested in learning more? Visit IXL.com/inclusive. That's IXL.com/inclusive. All right, after a short break, we'll get into my conversation with Riley Mulcahy. Catch you on the other side. Riley Mulcahy, welcome to the Think Inclusive podcast.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
Oh, Riley, we met a couple, well, it's been a little over a year now. We met at the Educating All Learners Alliance Community of Action meeting And that's when I first got to know you and a little bit about your work. And I'm so happy that you're here. Could you, just to get us started, share a little bit about yourself and the Raleigh Project, and we'll kind of just take it from there.
It's really exciting to be here tonight. So my name is Randy Wolkavy, and I am the executive director of the Raleigh Project, which is a nonprofit that is based on making sure that storytelling of students and individuals with learning differences can happen in a safe space, with the goal to educate and bring awareness to educators and other community members.
Fantastic. And why the Raleigh Project in particular? Like, what was it about your journey that moved you to start the project?
Yes. So I was diagnosed with dyslexia at age 7. And so there were a lot of identifiers pretty early on that I was going to struggle to read and write in a non-multisensory way of learning. And so my parents really advocated for me and made sure that when the district said, "Oh, Riley will have to wait, or we'll have to wait until Riley fails to really get the resources needed," and the horrible way to be fail model, my parents decided, you know, luckily we had the means to go to a private school, Charles Armstrong, which helped me to read. They used the Seligman method. And so really just coming out of that personal experience, obviously the main attached to it, but excited to see what the possibilities are on storytelling in advocacy. And so that's sort of how I got me started.
Gotcha. A couple things that I pulled out from what you just said. Multisensory, like instruction for reading, right? And then this idea of waiting to fail. So let's unpack those, because I think those are really interesting. So tell us more, because we do have a lot of educators that listen. They may or may not know that term, multisensory instruction for reading. So what is that? How can we understand that a little bit better?
Sure. Well, so omissions and the supporting effect is that I was telling through a science of reading methodology in Seligman, in making sure that the technology is infused in so I'm 25, so smart boards were all the rage back then. We still use smart boards at the school that I work in, but making sure that there's different ways of accessing material, but maybe familiar with the UDL framework. So making sure that there's ways to access the material that are not just a lecture for students of learning differences.
Right. And so this reminds me of a conversation I was having with some educators. I teach a class for people who are already working in the school system, but are taking an alternate path to certification to be a special education teacher. And something that we talk about is that reading interventions, that a reading intervention isn't a person, you know, it's actually an intervention. Like, it's something that you do and you plan for a particular student. And so, sometimes it's a little confusing because people will say, well, that student needs one-on-one instruction. Right. But what is that person doing? Right. If they're just using the same methodology as if you were in a whole group, then that's not really specially designed, and it's not really an intervention. It's just one. It's just like a one-to-one relationship, and that's not an actual intervention.
And so many of these reading interventions would, just like a lot of the principles of UDL or all of the principles of UDL, would help the whole look faster. You know?
Right.
And so, and so I was fortunate enough to go to a school that had small group instruction, one-on-one instruction, but to your point, we were using very specific reading interventions and, you know, this one size fits all model doesn't work, as we know, but also, you know, following the research of what actually works in classrooms. And yes, I will save the science of reading debate for another day, but you know, I really think that it's important to have strong reading interventions.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. And, you know, now that I think about it, we probably should have an episode about that. I think that that'd be interesting. Although, if you listen to Soul the Story, that podcast, Soul the Story, it's fantastic. I would recommend it to anyone. You're listening to a podcast now, so you must like them. So you should probably go listen to Soul the Story.
Excellent. It was the first time I was retweeted when it was safe to be on Twitter from the New York Times opinion section. So Emily Hinford, who's the reporter that broke the story, wrote something in the New York Times. They had a great education piece, and I retweeted it, and the New York Times opinion section, you know, my very small dose of fame got to my head. But Emily's work is amazing.
Yes. That's great. I love that. another thing you said, which is something that we really like to talk about, is storytelling. And storytelling is really important to you and the Riley Project. So, let's start here. Why do you think storytelling is important? And then we can get into maybe some examples.
Yeah. If you think of all of the movements, whether it be civil rights movements, different political movements, what do they have in common? They have a pretty strong narrative or story that is the basis of what they're trying to accomplish. So, for example, Judy Heumann, who passed away a couple of years ago, she was able to change the laws along with a lot of other people with disabilities because they were talking about their experiences, not being able to access certain spaces. So looking at storytelling, definitely writing, and we also make sure that we are accessible in the video and text-to-speech arena. So we partnered with GoodSeeker, which is a management platform that helps with storytelling. But my point in saying is, so often people with learning differences are told, you know, especially me, I was discouraged, you know, writing and reading are going to be difficult. Well, I also had teachers that looked at me and said, hey, you actually have a gift for writing. And I'd be like, what? Somebody with dyslexia could be a writer? What? And so terms in storytelling is shifting the narrative of making sure that we are not just looking at the deficit model, but looking at it like my friend Gil Brashoni says, who's a dyslexic designer, of dyslexia and other learning differences are actually hyperability. And so spreading that awareness is the first step to any really meaningful change, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Are there any stories or impactful moments from your work with the Riley Project that are on top of mind that you'd like to share?
I'm thinking of a couple, and I'll just share the common thread of, so often for people with disabilities, we have to create the change that we want to see in our own life. And a lot of times what happens is people with ADHD, with different invisible learning differences, are challenged. So I can think of a friend who shared their story is really impactful, and it's talking about the struggles of getting accommodations for her ADHD and different medication, what that means to have ADHD in that specific journey, and also the compacting mental health aspect that is not always touched on, the anxiety, the depression that can happen when you have a learning difference. And also, another thing is just going through the process of having an IEP or a 504 as a preschooler or a middle schooler, or how the parents have had to advocate. So those are a couple of examples.
In your experience, the experience that you had in school, and the challenges that you faced, like in just advocating for yourself and inclusive, inclusion, being accepted, what are some of the things that you've learned, in your schooling and then in the creation of the Riley Project?
I think some tips is definitely the importance of self-advocacy and self-awareness in students, and I really think that educators and school systems should be fostering more of that. We have social-emotional learning, but really, how does your disability affect you? How do you know to advocate for different accommodations or modifications that you need? And what are accommodations? What are modifications? Because so much of that, especially in the college arena, where parents go sort of out of the way of sign, unless they are able to be in the conversations, if you give access to that. That's the pivotal transition where a lot of students struggle to know themselves, honestly. But so having a place for storytelling, having a place where people can share their experiences can maybe create some awareness of, oh, I have ADHD, here's how it manifests in me, because that's a big thing. Like, all of these learning differences are a spectrum, right? So the one person's experience is going to be the other's. And so having a range of stories is really important as well.
Yes, absolutely. We see ourselves in the stories that we read, watch, listen to. And so if someone is it's experiencing a story that someone is telling a story and you're listening, and however you're experiencing that, you can see yourself in that challenge and then either learn from that challenge or get ideas on how to, tackle your own challenges. What I find interesting too is that the stories don't necessarily have to be true. Like, I think about the fiction, right? Mm-hmm. I'm reading a science fiction fantasy series right now. Mm-hmm. And it's called The Wheel of Time. It's actually pretty popular. I'd never even heard of it until like a couple years ago. And it's like this epic journey, all of these different characters, and they're like going across the lands and stuff like that. But this is completely made up. It's not true. But somehow I find myself in those characters. And I'm like, what would I do in that situation? And I'm connected to these people that are not real, right. You know? But it doesn't make it any less impactful, right?
That's a great point. And also, a lot of people with learning differences are authors of fiction or poets that, you know, it doesn't have to be true if you can have the experience, right? And to your point, talk about that experience, it's really powerful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We talked a little bit about technology, or you brought it up, and I'm wondering if there are some like assistive technology, or I don't know how you would phrase it exactly, but there are some examples of technology that have helped you, or that have helped people that have been affected by the Riley Project.
Yes, so many of things, of course. So first thing that comes to mind are text-to-speech, speech-to-text. But actually, I've heard about something that, and I got to test it out with, and they use it at the school that I'm at now. It's called Cognition Labs, and they're coming out with they have an OCR reader, so people can take photos of text. So it's meant for people with dyslexia, and it breaks down from the syllables, uppercases, capitalizes, confusing letters, and color codes the words. And so technologies like that definitely are really helpful, and I'm hoping we can have a partnership with them to see once they have more features to see if we can add it to our site. And I also will say, we do not use AI presently for our site, but I would really be interested in how we could help guide the storytelling process. You know, if it's making sure that if they want to use a grammar or spelling check, what if that's using ChatGPT? I really think embracing that a lot of people with learning differences can use AI as a tool, of course, responsibly, but is something that we could look forward to, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I use AI even, you know, in this role with our organization. And I'm finding that I'm actually relying on it more and more because I realize what it can do, you know? And so I'm wondering, what I'm hearing you say is if AI can help in framing or structuring a story, yeah, of a person, right, and aiding them in telling that story, I think that that's a really interesting use of AI for good, not for the bad, right? Things. Oh yeah, exactly. It's not going away, right?
Right. And so, why not? And especially for educators, I actually saw a custom GPT on LinkedIn and a lot of places that is a UDL planner. So you put in your lesson plan as an educator, and it will have ideas on how to make it to the design for UDL. And making sure that, like, there's an awareness or there's a literacy of AI for students with learning differences, because I really think use for good. It can be a great tool. I use it for my job. I use it for private projects. And even breaking ideas that I already have down and, you know, synthesizing things, I think it's a great tool. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow, that's great. Something else I thought of that I don't know if it's helpful or not. I feel like there are certain fonts that are quote unquote dyslexia fonts. Is that, am I saying that right? Or yeah. Ones that are supposed to be easier to read?
Yes. And I've used dyslexia fonts and there are, there's gosh, I'm trying to think better is Actively Learn, Cast of Beauty Hour as Deplusive, which break down the text and have, so if you're reading a book, it will have dyslexic font. I think there's some controversy because, again, we're assuming that all people with dyslexia or of different learning differences can read that font, can, or that it's a benefit to them, but for the purpose, I think it serves it. There's also a Dyslexic Advantage, which has been around for a long time, and there's a book, The Dyslexic Advantage. I know that they have research and tools on different fonts and different research pertaining to dyslexia too.
There's certainly a difference between like, oh, you're dyslexic or you have dyslexia. I'm not sure which one you prefer, but it's like, well, now you must read everything in this font. It's like, that's not what we're saying. Right. It's like the font is a tool and it can be used, you know, it's in, these wide generalizations. Yeah. Which brings me to a question. This topic of dyslexia is really not one that I think we've covered on the podcast. And there may be some educators that while their exposure to learners with this dyslexia are probably limited, especially since the word dyslexia is never really talked about in public school. Like, I know when I was in public school, it's like, no, you cannot say that.
Right.
Because it's not in the IEP. Like, you can't put it. And I'm trying to remember why. I think it was because, gosh, I don't even really know why that particular word is not really, like, it was never really, you know, but that's not my question. Sorry.
Yeah.
My question is, what are some characteristics of learners with dyslexia that educators may want to know just simply because they don't know? They don't know, like, really anything about these learners, and they may have them in their class.
Well, I would just say, and actually when I was on an AAP, qualified under other health impairment to your point, they don't use dyslexia in IEPs. However, and again, I'm not a researcher. I do not pretend to be. However, my understanding is that the struggle is really in the process of reading is the understanding the phonemic awareness, so sounding out words, sometimes, but not all the time, sometimes flip the letters, they have a hard time with reading comprehension. But another thing that I would stress is dyslexia is an umbrella term of different reading disorders and differences. And so I would stress that Marianne Wolfe who is a researcher at UCSF, or sorry, UCLA, she wrote The Prowess and the Squid, and she also has talked about how unnatural reading is actually for everyone in our brain. And so, and she has some really fascinating work, but definitely would recommend the Dyslexic Advantage and other resources that can talk more, but that's a very basic understanding.
So you can Okay. Okay. What about for families who may have children with learning differences? Any advice to parents as they're navigating the school system, and then just how to support their child?
Yes, early intervention and detection is key. If you suspect that your child has a learning difference, and you are at a public school or even private school, your home district has a obligation. I believe it's 60 days. They need to assess your student. There are so many laws, and it can get really challenging, especially the IEP process. But don't feel rushed to sign anything in the IEP process. If you can, have an advocate with you, or even a friend who's gone through this process. And a lot of it is making sure that the IEP goals, if that's a part of it, if you can get an IEP, is making sure that the goals actually align with your student. And that's a big, big issue. And have maybe your advocate or somebody work with the district to make strength-based IEP. So instead of talking about the deficits only, making sure there's a sort of a whole child understanding of what does your student enjoy doing? What is your student good at? And then talk about all of the challenges that are needed because of the laws. But I think that's a key piece to it. I would also say there's the Neurodiversity Education Series, which the Riley Project Parent Ventures, Children's Health Council, and Real2E are doing it. It's a free virtual webinar. We've had six or seven already, and it's top presenters on neurodiversity. And so there's definitely resources out there, and know that it's really stressful, I can imagine, as a parent to go through those resources, but also trust your gut. If something's seeming right, especially during the IEP process, know that there are resources.
Awesome. And we'll definitely link the Riley Project and then those resources in the show notes for anyone who wants more information about that. So speaking of the Riley Project and the resources that you do offer, you know, how can listeners get involved with the Riley Project, support the Riley Project, and just get more information about it?
Yeah, so as you visit our site, we kind of we show our stories. We share our stories that we already have. If you have a student, high school, college, or if you have an adult with learning differences, please share your story. It's really impactful. We can then show a video of you sharing your story. You can write it out or text to speech. We have all those options. I'm really hoping, I understand that it takes a lot to share your story. I'm really hoping we can figure out a way to do like a white paper so people can share anonymously, and so that pressure of going public is lessened. Of course, we are profit. We would love your support. But really, I think also we're in a phase where we're looking at how we can support students locally in the Bay Area. We're looking at an in-person group that talks a lot about self-awareness and self-advocacy. And what we're looking for also is for educators and nonprofit leaders looking at it is creating sustaining partnerships so that we can continue to share stories and create more awareness.
Gotcha. Okay. I don't, we talked about this before we started recording, but you are located in the Bay Area of California.
Yes. Right? Yes. But we share stories coming from that nationally. And we have national partners like Educating All Learners Alliance, which you mentioned.
Yeah, yes, gotcha. Okay, great. We do have a lot of educators that listen. Is there anything that you'd want educators to walk away from from this conversation with?
I would say that the key to making sure that students are seen, especially with learning differences, is to really make sure that they feel like they're understanding, like they belong. So making sure that, in any way that you can, making sure that it's creating a safe environment for students. And I think that's, is it a club that they started? Is it providing the agency that they can start a club? You could be a supervisor. I also stress, believe your students. I think a lot of times educators are stressed out, underpaid, and I totally sympathize. But, for the most part, when a kid with ADHD is troubling you, that they're distracted or they need more time, they're not trying to get out of work. They're really trying to advocate for themselves. And I think it's really important for teachers to understand that.
Can you stay on for the mystery question? All right, here we go. The mystery question is, which actor or actress which actor or actress would you want to play you in a movie of your life? That's a hard question. Which actor or actress would you want to play you in a movie of your life? Wow. Wow.
Well, I just saw the Bob Dylan movie and completely unknown, and I wouldn't be mad at Timothy Chalamet playing me, but I don't know how realistic that is, but Timothy Chalamet, why not?
Why not? Yeah. Oh my God. And I really want to see that movie too. Is it good?
It is. It's very good. They did a really good job. Of course, there's some Hollywood fanfare, but very.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm trying to think who. Okay, so I'm going to have to look up his name right now because I can't. I'm not going to be able to remember. But he is an SNL character that we love, an SNL person. Marcelo Hernandez.
Okay.
Yeah, yes. Marcelo Hernandez. Okay, so Marcelo Hernandez, because I think that if they made a movie of my life, I'd want it to be funny.
Agree.
And I really like him. So, Marcelo, if you're out there and listening and you want to make a movie about my life, you're my guy, okay?
Call me, Timothy.
Yeah. Call me. All right. This is awesome. Awesome. Riley Mulcahy, thank you so much for being on the Think Inclusive podcast. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited to join, and thank you so much for having me.
That's all the time we have for this episode of Think Inclusive. Now, let's roll the credits. Think Inclusive is brought to you by me, Tim Villegas. I handle the writing, editing, design, mixing, and mastering. This podcast is a proud production of the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education. Our original music is by Miles Kredich, with additional tunes from Melody. A big shout out to our sponsor, IXL. Check them out at IXL.com/inclusive. We truly appreciate each and every one of you who tunes in. We'd love to hear how you're using these episodes. Are they part of your teaching toolkit? Are you sharing them with school administrators? Drop me a line at tvegas@mcie.org and let me know. And hey, if you're still with us this far into the episode, it probably means that you love Think Inclusive and the work MCIE is doing. Can I ask a small favor? Help us keep the momentum going by donating at our website, mcie.org. Just click the button at the top of the site and chip in $5, $10, $20. It would mean the world to us and the children in the schools and districts we partner with. Thanks for your time and attention, and remember, inclusion always works.
From MCIE.